Wally, what strikes me most about this scenario is the complexity involved with an electrical failure. First of all, you don't know what caused it. You don't know really what you have. And it creates tremendous uncertainty in the cockpit. Well, that's the opposite of what we want as pilot in command. We want to be the masters of our airplane. And all of a sudden, now, not only are we trying to fly the airplane to the best of our ability, but we're trying to troubleshoot and deal with tremendous uncertainty. How do we manage this uncertainty? Because we need to manage this situation, and you've brought a really unique situation to the forefront here.
Well, in the scenario that I've described, it would appear as if the alternator belt simply broke or the alternator failed. But you're right, Bob. There could be a whole host of other issues that could cause an electrical failure. And you need to consider those factors as you're planning your IFR flights and be doing the what-if scenarios of what am I going to do if I have a problem, smoke in the cockpit, for example, or a high rate of charge. So yeah, there's a lot of things that can go wrong, and if you haven't thought about them beforehand, you're not going to be able to handle it when the time comes.
You know, in the big airplane world, so much work is done in simulators right now, but in general aviation, we don't have that same luxury. So you bring up a good point about there's a lot of things, you know, you can't simulate in the airplane. So it really becomes the basis for a hangar session or a what-if session on the ground where we can calmly sit there and discuss these things. But, you know, how many of us play that game? You know, think about the time we sit around wasting time in airports waiting for the weather to clear, waiting for things. And it's a great time to play the what-if game and go through some of these scenarios on the ground in the safety, you know, of the airport lounge or even the cafeteria to kind of play out, you know, hey, what am I going to do when this occurs?
Or during a proficiency flight with a good instructor. Good instructor can simulate, can pull an alternator circuit breaker while you're not looking and see if you catch it, see what kind of indications there are.
Wally, I want to get back to what you mentioned relative to the handheld radios and the effectiveness of them. Many, many pilots have one in their airplane. I don't think very many of those pilots have actually tried to use one in the airplane, however. As you said, it's not really practical and useful to try to use that radio in the airplane in a situation where you're under duress. You really need some kind of connections. And I've seen some simple setups where somebody has gone to Radio Shack and bought an earplug that works in their radio, and they stick that in their ear under their headset, and that effectively allows them to receive. Because once you put this handheld radio down on the seat, if you don't have some kind of connection to your ear, you're not going to even hear it with the ambient cabin noise.
Right. You need the two patch cords. You need one into your headset, and you need the other one to the external antenna. Without the external antenna, it's pretty much useless also.
So that's right. Without the external antenna, your reception is probably
about as far as you can throw a rock.
Right. A few miles, depending on the airplane and how much plexiglass you have in that airplane. So my suggestion would be, if you have a handheld, try it in flight. Yep. See how well it works and see what you need to do to improve the reception and transmission of that radio.
And where you keep it in the airplane. How many times you see people that have it in their flight bag in the back seat?
Oh, it's not going to do you much good there.
It's not going to do you much good.
Let alone what Wally mentioned about charging up the batteries or replacing the batteries.
Right, and how long the handheld's going to last, too. Mm-hmm.
And you need to make those connections, or at least get them ready to use before you take off. If you try to plug all this stuff in an emergency situation, you're going to make a mistake.
Right.
Yeah. It's not going to work.
Right.
No.
But a couple other things. The one thing that you did, and as soon as you realize that you have the electrical problem, is declare the emergency with ATC. No hesitation. That's an emergency. That's something that you want to act on right now and tell them. And then tell them what you need. Don't let them badger you with the fuel and souls on board and stuff. Sometimes the best thing to do is just say, look, stand by a minute. I got a checklist. I got a couple of things to deal with here. I'll be back to you in a couple of minutes. Your first priority might be just doing that, reconfiguring the aircraft. You might have to shut the master off to reset the alternator or, you know, whatever your particular airplane calls for. So just tell them to stand by.
Well, that brings up another point, John, in terms of being familiar with your airplane in terms of what you need to do in a given situation
exactly.
to try to reset the alternator. Another thing that's probably worth thinking about, and again, Wally, you got into this and it made me think about it a little bit more, and that's getting familiar with what items on your airplane draw a lot of power. You know, what do you have on that airplane that you can immediately shut off? That might be the autopilot. If you've got air conditioning, that might be air conditioning.
Any of the fan.
Yeah, blower fans,
or making trade-offs. I might need the pitot heat because of the weather conditions.
Right.
What can I trade off for that?
Exactly.
And that's going to require some pre-flight work on the pilot's
part to become knowledgeable of the airplane.
And one way they can do that is to look at the size of the circuit breakers that power the various units in the airplane. That doesn't necessarily say how much they draw, but a circuit breaker that has...
A 10 amp or 10 or 15 is
a unit that draws a lot more than a circuit breaker that has a 3 amp. So they can sort of get a clue by just looking at circuit breakers.
One thing I did want to mention also is I would not be too worried about the transponder. That would be one of the first things I'd turn off, tell ATC that you're going to do it. Most modern ATC radars can track a primary, which is a non-transponder, really well.
I found out in a transponder failure, John, that they can tag that primary target with your information.
Right.
And it's no problem for them.
The only thing that it will not do is reacquire if the tag falls off. Then they mm-hmm. have to manually, and you're going to do that either through turns, observe turns, tell you to turn 30 degrees left and observe the turn, or a position report. If you report over a VOR, over a fix or something, mm-hmm. they can use that as position correlation. The other thing that, speaking about ATC, I would definitely tell them, once you get your plan in mind that you want to turn around and you want to go back, tell them exactly what you're going to do and tell them what your lost comm plan is going to be. I had a situation once in the Cardinal where I had an actual alternator failure. It was IFR on top. There was a couple of holes around. I knew I could get down through the holes. I knew that there was a undercast. It was a good VFR underneath. I said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a 360. I'm going to go through this hole. There's an airport 10 miles away that has a tower. I'm going to enter a left downwind for the runway. If I lose everything, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to be looking for a light. And they knew, and I knew what I was going to do. That's my plan. You know, in your case, what you might want to do, because you're much, much further away, is I'm going to turn everything off, and every 10 minutes, I'm going to turn my handheld on, and I'm going to check in. Or I'm going to check in at this VOR. I'm going to check in at, you know, some designated point that you don't actually have to have all this stuff on at the same time. So
that's a good point.
Those are some options.
You know, it's key here, Wally, and I think the most dramatic point that I've gleaned from this is how challenging it is to manage this complex situation. But I think our ability to manage the situation ties in with the discussion and the points that Bob and John made about systems knowledge. And I'll tell you, I think that's a real weak point for many, many pilots. I mean, some people are drawn to, you know, to systems knowledge, and they want to know and understand everything about their airplane. Well, when you think back to most of our basic flight training, it didn't include any systems training as far as knowing your airplane. The other thing is, you know, we get out there to the airport, you know, one day we're in a 172, next day we're in a Cherokee, and they're not all the same. You know, they're all very, very different. So making it a point to know your airplane, and I think it's clearly going to impact your ability to manage this situation. And if you don't manage this situation, it's going to manage you. And you go from being the pilot in command to the passenger on the airplane. And once again, with these skills that you talk about here, and they don't come easily, these are skills that pilots have to work on the ground, in our spare time, you know, becoming the master of your airplane, very, very important, so that when you get a challenge like this, and it may be once in your career, you have an electrical failure. So how good are we ready for that one-time event? Well, you know, that's where the what-ifs come in, and that's where the extra study and preparation comes in. The other thing that John just mentioned too, I think, you know, do we really want to deal with this scenario in flight, or do we want to get on the ground and let, you know, others, including ourselves, sort the thing out? You know, sorting out a problem is best done on the ground. In airplane, there's enough going on under normal conditions, you know, to occupy most of our skill sets. So getting the airplane on the ground, I think, in any situation, in any emergency, should become a priority, as opposed to getting to our business meeting. Get on the ground, sort this thing out, and get back to normal.
One other thing that might be worth considering or investigating for your airplane is a backup alternator. Some airplanes have the capability to have installed on them STC ram air turbine alternators. You might want to look at that for your particular airplane. It might be an option that is worthwhile in terms of protection against this kind of event happening to you.
Those of us who fly single engine, single alternator airplanes just need to consider all these facts, I think, and realize the limitations that are there when that alternator fails and incorporate that into our flight planning.
Well said.
And if we don't have a good option, a good out, then we shouldn't take that flight.
There are other options too, like as you said, Bob, one of the things that we have in the Cardinal is a backup electric attitude indicator, which has, it's internally lit, it has a battery. So if you lose everything, even at night, you still have standby attitude indicator with a good 30
independent
minute
power supply.
Yeah, yep. Independent. Couple other things that I just want to throw out too as some other thoughts that I had on this is it for the divert airport. I would definitely opt for a towered airport. I wouldn't necessarily go back to a non-towered airport for a couple of reasons. You may not be able to turn the lights on at the non-towered airport. Maybe they couldn't get in touch with somebody or for whatever reason. I want somebody in a tower who can do that. There might be somebody else in the pattern too. You show up at night with no lights and no radio. You don't know that there's somebody else in the pattern. They can't see you. You can't hear them. The tower would get notification from center or approach. Even with no transponder, no lights, they would be able to pass a position report to the tower. And God forbid if the worst does happen, the tower is right there to assist with fire rescue or, you know, who knows what could happen there. Another option to consider, even though it's not technically legal, would be a cell phone or to be able to text. And that may be a viable method of communication also. Wouldn't hurt to ask ATC for a phone number, put it in your cell phone. You could try. The worst that could happen is it doesn't work. But occasionally cell phones do work in the air, and that may be something too.
Those are good points.
Well, I know you immediately indicated in your scenario that you would declare an emergency, but I can relate to you a terrible, terrible story about two gentlemen, two private pilots. This actually happened in Hartford, Connecticut. Electrical failure at night. They had a handheld radio. So they didn't think this was an emergency situation. The airplane was running fine. We have a handheld radio. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal was when they got back to Hartford, you know, the tower couldn't see them. So how does tower clear an airplane to land that it can't see? And they're coming in, and as they're seeing all the lights of Hartford, you know, they are now in sequence behind another airplane. And they lose that other airplane in the lights of Hartford. So the long and the short of it is tower, because tower couldn't see them, had to direct a go-around. And as these two pilots attempted a circle to land at night with electrical failure, they lost control of their airplane, and both pilots died for failure to declare an emergency.
No panel lights.
No panel lights, no horizon. But once again, with the emergency, no go-around. You have traffic priority. You're going to land now. So, I mean, it's a, you know, you're hard to envision that sequence of events. And once again, you know, a little bit of complacency versus getting priority makes a big difference.
That's a great point. I think, you know, the fact that this can happen just tells us that we need to think about it and plan ahead for it, and then also practice night landings without landing lights and no panel lights, as you pointed out, so that the day this does happen, we'll be prepared.